the last one. Elul is the first day of the last month of the Jewish calendar year, and it's of course time for beginning the prep process from now until Yom Kippur, at least for this time how should I say, researching our hearts. I love that word, research. What is research? It means I've already searched. I got to research again. I got to search again. So every year we get an opportunity to research our path, where we're going, and etc. This week's parsha gives us a little bit of a help about this. It says in the beginning, it's called the Shoftim. It's a very well-known parsha because it has it in the famous lines, justice, justice shall you pursue. It has the laws about how kings should behave themselves, but primarily it's talking about appointing shoftim, which means magistrates or judges, v'shotrim, officials, or sometimes in modern Hebrew, policemen. It says, shoftim v'shotrim tiyeh titen lecha bechol sha'arecha. And you should put them up at all of your gates, all of your gates. And you, literally, that means the gates of your cities, that there should be a public square, etc. But I'd like to offer another interpretation of that, that we want to put it, we want to put shoftim, judgments, or judges. And these judges, we're told in the following line, should be impartial, not acceding to the poor because they think they deserve it, even when they're wrong, or to the rich who think they deserve it because of their power. But basically, we want to put shoftim and shotrim in all of our gates. And what are those gates? Are the gates of perception. The gates of perception. What does it mean to put a shofet? What does it mean to have a shoter? So I was, a little short time that I had preparing, I found this, of course, wonderful quote from many of you may have heard, of course, from William Blake, who said, if the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. For man has closed himself up till he sees all things through narrow chinks of his cavern. What a great line, narrow chinks of his cavern. And of course, we all know these ideas of seeing our receptors, our sensory receptors of gates, of bringing in all kinds of stuff, has to be cleansed, as he said. And the whole creation, he says, will be consumed and appear infinite and holy, whereas it is now appears finite and corrupt. And this will come to pass by an improvement of sensual enjoyment. Sensual enjoyment. And then he says, this could be accomplished. It's a very famous line. He who binds himself a joy, who binds to himself a joy, does the winged life destroy. But he who kisses the joy as it flies, lives in eternity's sunrise. That's a beautiful line. Man. But he who kisses the joy as it flies, lives in eternity's sunrise. So, how does this work? Well, all of us are perceiving things all the time. All of us are giving judgment all the time. So the question becomes, how do we perhaps create a kind of impartial judgment, something that does not necessarily, is not biased in any way? The only bias we have, of course, is our individual biases. This feels good. This doesn't feel good to me at this moment. This smells good, doesn't smell good. This sounds good, doesn't sound good. This tastes good, doesn't taste good. Well, that's in the moment too. It's unclear whether it always tastes badly to you, or is that an acquired kind of thing you're grasping onto? This must taste bad, so because of what it is, rather than be able to expand our sense of perception as being sort of more, if you will, right worded, more fleeting and changing all the time. Our ideas, our perceptions are changing all the time. So from our practice, it begins to seem to me that that's what we are always trying to do, is trying to become aware of our perceptions, aware of how information comes into ourselves, how feelings come into ourselves, and how important it is to judge them, if you will, impartially, and also to also perhaps learn to govern them in a certain way, or police them, if one would use that term of shotrim, to police them in a certain way. How can we avoid having our perceptions lead us astray? How can we avoid our perceptions to be, if you will, permeated by our prejudices? Is really, really an interesting practice. And I think that's what we try to do in our practice, is that we, when we are become awakened and become aware of our senses, our sensory needs, etc., we can take them and make them a opportunity to connect with the infinite, or we could use them as a thing that just basically pushes us away from any further inquiry. Oh, that smells bad. Let's get out of here. That's one way we deal with it. That tastes bad. You spit it out. Now, all of that is perfectly normal, of course. We want to avoid bad smells. We want to avoid bad tastes. On the other hand, we have the capacity of, through our experience of a bad smell or a bad taste or a jarring sound, all of those things are things to wake us up and become aware of things. So it's not necessarily that there is something bad about bad taste. It is bad taste to me at that moment. But it's not necessarily that tasting or any kind of taste is necessarily bad or good. But we know from evolutionary biology and all that, we've created this possibility through our senses to also protect ourselves, safety from poison, etc., etc. So there are a lot of reasons why we do have to pay attention to what our immediate perceptions are, in order not to get, if, for instance, if you hear the roar of a lion, maybe you should get out of the way so you don't become the lion's lunch. So there's all kinds of reasons to be aware and react in a way to our perceptions. But if in a broader sense, I understood this parsha is telling me, you really have to learn to govern yourself in a way, and avoid, if you will, some of the pitfalls of rampant, if you will, reaction, quick reaction to things. Oh, the tape, you know, you want to just get away from it. Get away from it. Protect me. So we got to be careful about that. So that's what hit me reading this parsha. I said, wow, this is a whole way of understanding that there is a place for everything in our perceptions. There is a place for it, but we are not necessarily always going to become controlled by it. That's not easy, because we want things to be as authentic as we can be for ourselves. I want that smell to be a real smell. And yet I know that there are things that are artificial that makes us smell the same way, right? I smell flowers, and people have created perfumes that smell like flowers. It's not a flower anymore, it's a perfume, right? Because they want to hold on to the smell of the flower. But you have a chance. You could maybe, instead of buying perfume, buy flowers. I mean, it's really it's a choice we can make as we enter into our being aware of our perceptions, be aware of our sensory intake. So we have a need, as we've talked about, of course, constantly here. We have a need to attach ourselves to things. We have a need to grasp things. We have a need for things to stay the same. I talked, that was it last week, I don't remember, the week before, about the fact that what we're wishing people in this time of the year is a good change, allowing ourselves to change, and not saying, oh, I'm so afraid of changing, because it's fairly comfortable. Even in my misery, there's a certain comfort in that misery. I've known this misery for such a long time. Oh, it's become a friend of mine, this misery. Oh, don't go away. Ah, but then when it goes away, you say, gee, why did I have to have that misery all that time? Why did I have to have that sense of suffering? What was I holding on to? What was I craving? Why was I so afraid? Why was I so afraid to change? And that's what tshuva is. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. Tshuva, according to many of our scholars, is becoming an entirely new person. Can you imagine? The expectations of change are that you can actually become a new person, and you don't have to be the way you've been. This is the real power. It's a power, and it's not easy. That's why we have these special days to give us some, if you will, a little bit of encouragement that everybody's doing it now. You can join the crowd. It's okay. Everybody's going to change. Don't worry about it. But you got to do it all year, of course. We just give ourselves this time of great intensity. And I think one of the wonderful things about Elul, and I'll stop with this, we'll have a discussion about Elul, is I love the acronym. I talked about it in the shul last week. The acronym Aleph Lamed Vav Lamed could be Ani Ledodi Vedodi Li. I am to my beloved, and my beloved is to me. And I mentioned that one of the things that we do in Elul is to re-enchant ourselves with the divine. And we do that, as you know, after Tisha B'Av. We've gone through destruction. We've gone to the breakdown of our structures. We feel like we no longer have a place to be, a place to aim for. We lose a goal. And then, of course, that everything leaves the building, leaves the Beit HaMikdash, and goes into the fields. And on the 15th day of Av, if you remember, people would go into the fields and begin the process of creating new romances. New romances. Where do you find it? No longer in the building, no longer in any one place. It's found out there in the world. And we try to meet God. And now we meet God where? No longer in the Beit HaMikdash and the order of the sacrifices, and all of the ritual and all of the rigmarole of having a centralized place of worship. We find it in the capacity to see God in the field and realize we too have to fall in love with God again. And we trust that God will fall in love with us again after that tragedy. So that's what Anila Dodi V'Dodili is. And basically, Elul is that time of rekindling, of restarting, of recognizing, and I love that word, recognizing that there are capacities that we have to bring tranquility, to bring sense of connection back. And then on Rosh Hashanah, we say, okay, God, you didn't do the greatest job last year either. You know, it could have been a better job. We could have had less tragedies, you know, that kind of stuff, if you believe in that kind of God, right? So we say, okay, we'll forgive you, and we will coronate you again and make you king, HaMelech. And then, of course, we will have to work on our interpersonal relationships, because ultimately that is not dependent upon anything with the divine. It's with the totally human capacity we have. We have a great capacity to hurt each other. I want you to know, to be cruel. We have human cruelty is an amazingly harsh thing, and we see it through all of human existence and civilization. And yet we also know we have the capacity to bring people closer to love and to reconnect. And that's the scale we live in. You know, it's one or the other. And that's what Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that's coming up in a month, is all about. We have the choice of which side of the scale we're going to add our neshama to, our soul to. Are we going to be on the side of cruelty or the side of love? The side of chesed or the side of gevura? And of course, what we learn in our spiritual tradition is we will never be able to be one totally or the other totally. So at best, we hope we can blend it, chesed and gevura, into something that's splendor. Tiferet, because the splendor comes from the balance, it's not from the eradication of one or the other. If we could eradicate evil, I'm all for it. What do I sign on the bottom line? You can't. Can I ratify chesed as the only way to be in the world? Yeah, that would sound great too, but we can't do it. So that's the real work of Elul, is to become aware of our perceptions, become aware of how we basically hold ourselves back from being, if you will, united with all that there is, and to feel that indeed by bringing all that is together, we have the capacity to make the right choices. It gives us the basis, it gives us the foundation to make the right choices by realizing I am not the master of all, but I'm just a part of a grander scheme that's beyond my comprehension, but also the mystery of all things. And that my even being here alive at this point in my life is a mystery. But I have the capacity to establish shoftim and shotrim, impartial judges, and the capacity to learn to govern certain kinds of sensory input, that we can do it in a fairly non-judgmental way. So shoftim v'shotrim. Judges and policemen. Very, very appropriate for our time of the year when we hear about indictments. Judges and policemen. So we shall see how that takes us in the next few months. But I open it up just to this idea of how do we cleanse our doors of perception, right? Aldous Huxley wrote a very important book about this, The Doors of Perception. Which talks about expanding consciousness. He does it through, if you will, possibly through various means and various substances that will help in that. So here we go, guys. Let it rip, as they say. Don't be shy. I'll call on you in a moment.